Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Constructive Criticism. This is episode 138. I am your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, the one, the only, the smelly sneaky bear.
That's rude.
It was a rude thing to say.
Is that how you got your name?
Yeah.
Honest answer, yes, I was smelly.
Yeah.
That's true, that happened.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm tilted.
About what?
My weekend was ruined.
Oh, I'm sorry. What happened?
Well, you know, typically on a Sunday when I'm working, I work every Sunday, I go downstairs, I turn on my Xbox, and I watch Magic coverage all weekend while I work.
Oh, that must be really fun. Like, that would be like a really great thing to do on a Sunday, especially when no football and basketball to like compete with at all.
Yeah, and there were two GPs this weekend, both of them standard, like this great diverse format, and yeah, no coverage. But you know what is great every week, week in and week out, is Oasis Games. You can check them out at oasisgamesslc.com, oasiscg.com, and mtgoasis.com. You can get 5%. Actually, it is 4%. It's brought to my attention. This is still not fixed. I want everybody to know this is not Oasis Games' fault. It is the company that runs their software, basically. It is 4% off of every order by using the code WouldThatBeGood, no spaces, and 15% off of your first order. Even if you're never going to shop at Oasis Games again, get that 15% off your chest. Like, that's a great deal on Magic cards.
Yeah, it's a different code, right? CCMTG is
yep,
the code?
CCMTG.
Yeah.
15% off your first order with that code. We shop exclusively at Oasis Games. It's nice to have like an online retail store right outside of our door.
Yeah.
Apparently that's hard to say.
Yeah, it's a real tongue twister. But Oasis Games is great. Like, I like going there. I play most of my Magic there. I get all of my cards there. Even like if I'm buying cards, if I'm working with them on anything, like if I'm trying to get a deal on packs to, you know, have a booster draft party, like Oasis Games is just great for everything. So yeah, it's where you should buy your Magic cards.
Check them out. You can also check out the, oh my gosh, I forgot the name of the MTGO Traders. Every other week, we will put this podcast on Pure MTGO. To switch off with LTO, which is a bi-weekly podcast. So check out MTGO Traders. They're the only place that I actually buy Magic Online cards at this point because it's so easy.
I have never bought a Magic Online card from someone other than MTGO Traders.
And they just make it like...
Yeah, it's been very convenient for me. You know, I buy and sell out of Magic Online a lot because you can recoup pretty close to your money. Like, you don't lose that much money, so it's kind of like renting a deck when all is said and done. And so, like, I've bought a lot of cards from them. I sell my tickets back to them. Like, it works out really nicely. And I've never had any reason to even consider shopping somewhere else.
Fair enough. You can also support the podcast directly by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. Great way to support the podcast. We have a new patron this week. Adrian Carr is our newest patron. Thank you so much for being a patron, Adrian. We really appreciate it. It means the world to us every time somebody donates any amount to the podcast. You can donate any amount starting at $1 to anything you want. You know, we often joke a million, but, you know, secretly in our hearts.
Yeah, someday. Someday.
So just got a Facebook.
Mark Cuban, if you're a listener.
Like, yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, invest. So every week on the show, we invite people to submit questions that are patrons of the show. It's one of the benefits of being a patron. You can go become a patron by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. You know, whether it's deck list, rules question, general questions, concerns or stories, hashtag always improving stories, anything that you really want. So Ryan Kendall says, hey guys, I have been struggling with something for the past few weeks and was wondering if other players have had experienced the same thing. He says, I've been playing Collected Company decks, first ban, then four-color
Cryptolith Rites.
Oh, there you go. And I can't seem to figure out if either I just don't like the deck and the way that it plays, or if I'm just not as good with the deck yet, so I'm struggling to play it and also, you know, come to victory. Also, in regards to the previous answer, whether or not your previous answer is true, do I still keep grinding the deck that I don't enjoy simply for the sake of improving myself as a player? So we talk about this a little, or I'm going to talk about this a little bit later on the podcast. But honestly, I think that the answer is yes and no. So the answer to the first question is sometimes it will be that you're just not enjoying it. Like, sometimes you're just going to, like, play a deck 1,000 times and hate it even though it's the best deck in the format.
Yeah, it's not necessarily the right deck for you, and if you really, really don't like playing it, you shouldn't play it, honestly. Like, it could potentially hurt your win percentage to play a suboptimal deck, but in this case, I don't think it really does. I mean, all of the company decks are pretty good, but none of them are so good that you need to feel obligated to play them.
Yeah, I think the format will dictate whether or not it's just wrong to play another deck, right? Like, the last time that really happened was probably Cobblade.
Mono Black was pretty close to that.
I mean, it's true, but you could play decks that beat Mono Black pretty consistently. Like, Mono Black, I think that, like, both Mono Blue Devotion, Green Red Devotion, Blue White Control, like, I think all those decks were still viable.
Yeah, that's true. I wasn't playing when Cobblade, so, like, I don't know exactly
right. And, like,
how that felt.
In Cobblade, like, once Batterskull was printed, that was and, like, you were just wrong to play another deck. Until the deck was banned. And I think that what's important here is, does your win percentage go up more by playing a deck you hate or playing a deck that you playing a less impressive deck that you're going to do better with because you like it more and you're having fun and you can more easily focus on things. Ryan, I'll ship you an article by Reed Duke that actually talks about this specifically. But yeah, I think the answer is just yes and no.
Yeah.
Like, don't force yourself to play it in the sense that, like, yeah, you should play it, find out how the matchups go, but if you don't love it, you don't have to play it in a tournament.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And also, if you are playing a deck you don't like, I think that everyone subconsciously roots against themselves when they're playing a deck they don't like, and it makes you play suboptimally. It's just that's just something that happens, and I think it's inescapable for almost everybody that plays Magic, because yeah. You want to feel pride in your wins, and it's really tough to do that when you're playing a deck that you just don't like the way it plays, you don't think the deck is good, blah, blah, blah. It's really tough to really put yourself in a winning position with that mentality.
Yep. So hope that answers your question, Ryan, and thank you. And don't forget that you too can ask these kind of questions, post any kind of deck list you want, going to patreon.com/ccmtg to be part of the show. As you guys can tell, Manny's not on the podcast this week, and he was on the schedule. And Manny is saying goodbye. He's no longer going to be a part of Constructed Criticism. Manny's got a child on the way. He just got married. He's not enjoying Standard right now. He's not playing much Magic. And he doesn't want to be on the podcast and give subpar content. The exact same reason that Macklin actually quit last time was, oh, I'm quitting Magic, so I don't want to do a Magic podcast. Oh, also the first time that he quit the podcast when he said, I'm quitting Magic, I don't want to do a Magic podcast.
Yeah, and when I quit the podcast, it was the exact same thing.
Like, right.
It's really hard to make a Magic podcast when you don't play Magic. It's basically impossible. You're just talking out of your ass.
Yeah, and we respect Manny, and we love him, and once he comes back to Magic...
I mean, we love him, but...
Once he comes back to Magic, he's more than welcome on the show, and we wish him the best. He said he didn't want to come on and say goodbye because he thought he'd get too emotional, but we'll miss you, bud. So... All right. Hashtag always improving. So every week on the show, we want to talk about something that has made us better at Magic. This week, a listener told me about this. There's applications that you can use that turn articles into audio.
Dope.
So I listen to a lot of podcasts. There's actually just not enough podcasts to fill the time that I'm in the car listening to content. Because I don't like listen to music very much anymore. I'm almost always listening to something to like improve my life. And Magic podcast, Magic articles turned into audio is like the sweetness. So I've been devouring a ton of content. So shout out to the person who, I don't remember who it was, but shout out to you. Also, I didn't go on Tilt and won a match because of it.
Good job.
It was pretty great. I was down a game. I was drawing nothing but lands in game two and just like, was like, you know what? Even if I lose this match, I'm just going to play every turn correctly, and I'll be happy with that. And then eventually, I just slowly played the next turn correctly, and the next turn correctly, and the next turn correctly, and suddenly I was winning.
Yeah, I mean, that can happen. You really shouldn't get discouraged, like, just because things don't look good, because sometimes your opponent can draw, like, 12 lands in a row, right? Like, even if you're super far behind, you can have one good top deck, and then they can brick a bunch of times in a row, and then you win. And like, sometimes it doesn't even need to be that extreme. But as long as you are always playing to your outs, you're trying to find a way to win, you can pull rabbits out of hats.
Yeah, it was, and I won my game two, and then game three, it wasn't even close, and it felt really good, because, like, my goals of the last couple weeks have just been, like, even on Moto, where, like, I find myself, like, slamming my fist on my table a lot, I've stopped doing that. I'm starting to, like, get back to, like, a year ago, when I was really happy playing Magic, and it feels really good. And just having that mindset of, like, I'm just going to play every turn correctly and then be happy with that, won me a match of Magic, and that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, and I mean, like, staying calm, not going on tilt, like, those are the things that make you good at Magic. That's why, you know, Owen and Yuya combined for their 900,000th GP top 8 between them this weekend. Is because they
don't... A little bit of hyperbole. Sorry.
Maybe, like, a tiny bit. I mean, Yuya has, like, almost that many, and, you know, Owen's no slouch, so... But, like, I just mean, it's what great Magic players do, and it's a small thing you can do to improve your game, is just not lose to yourself. Don't lose to things you can, that don't, aren't going to make you lose.
So, how about you? How did you improve at Magic this week, Casey?
Well, I've been back to brewing. I haven't really brewed a deck in a long time prior to this week, just because, you know, it's not one thing, it's another. And I've been trying different things, trying to find edges, playing different variations of known decks, or just playing totally new decks. And it's helped, you know, really me understand the format and understand decks better. And something that I used to do a lot and used to be really good at. So I want to try to stretch those muscles again.
That's awesome. Yeah, I know that you've been enjoying a banned green-white tokens deck.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a small change. But, like, I was like, Westfall Abbey actually basically is never relevant in this deck ever. And Lumbering Falls would be better in approximately 100% of draws. And then, like, oh, that opened you up to be playing some amount of, you know, counter spells and just little things like that. Like, just really trying to think outside the box and trying to find ways to specifically win the mirror match. And I've been very successful in that pursuit just by, you know, trying to go off the beaten path with that deck.
Awesome. Well, let's get right into the next segment on the show. Every week on the show, we want to talk about a specific format and what's going on in it. We were going to do matching MTGO to paper, but paper was so different this week. I kind of would rather just talk about paper.
Yeah, this format was busted wide open.
But we also don't have the top 32 results from GP Minneapolis yet, and that could change this. There's, other than green-white tokens being as good as we thought it would be, I mean, just you could see one deck and three in the top 16 of one deck, and it can completely shake this up.
Very true.
So, but that being said, we do have the top 32 from GP Manchester and the top 8 from
GP Minneapolis.
And so the way that it works is you get 6 points for first, 5 points for second, 4 points for third through fourth, 3 points for a top 8, 2 points for a top 16, and 1 point for a top 32. And coming in at number 5, we have Mono White Humans with 7 points. Or Mono White Aggro.
Yeah, I mean, some of these were splashing, like, Needle Spires.
Yeah, that's the popular... So a lot of them do it out of the board. It was just, like, a couple Needle Spires in the board.
Right, you play like, Battlefield Forge in your main and Needle Spires in the sideboard.
Right.
Which is, you know, it's certainly an approach you can take.
It's one of the ways that you can, like, make Gideon not the worst thing to have in your sideboard.
Right, yeah. Going up lands and... It lets you, like, really be dedicated to playing the 18 or 19 lands instead of needing to, like, cheat up on lands, which makes most of your draws terrible. So I think it is a good strategy, but just to let you know, like, we're calling it mono white because it effectively is, but, you know, this is technically a red splash.
Yeah, and I think the red splash is correct. I think the deck is good. This is one of those decks that I wish I owned, like, just to, like, flex those muscles every once in a while, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's a fun deck. I did own it on Moto for a short time, and I played it at game day. It's a sweet deck, but I feel like your bad matchups feel so frustrating with the deck that, like, it wasn't, like, letting me get what I was hoping to get out of matches of Magic.
Why is it coming back up this week?
Well, I think that it's, like, a pretty good matchup against most Collected Company decks. It's only really bad against, like, sweepers for the most part, but, like, you can just basically never beat any sweeper with the deck. But if your opponents aren't playing sweepers, they're playing creatures, you can usually get in under them. Like, even if you have to make some sacrificial attacks, like, that's kind of been the nature of White Weenie for a long time. But just force through that damage and come out ahead.
I've always found White Weenie to be, like, a really hard deck to play.
Oh, yeah. Crazy hard. Like, Mono Red is not easy to play, as some people think it is, but it's totally different. And, like, you have burn to finish out the match.
Yeah, whereas out the game, you can't rely on that with White Weenie.
Every point counts.
The games that you win with White Weenie that are out of hand are really out of hand. And then the games that, like, you win that are close are, like, by the skin of your teeth.
Right. You made a correct decision on turn three, let you win the game on turn six, because you got in for that extra point.
Right. And that's a huge deal. And I think that Mono White, there are players that get rewarded for playing this kind of deck. And if it's something you enjoy, I think it's okay in this format. It is the number one deck on MTGO.
Yeah.
Which, surprisingly, has not been true, even though it costs no dollars. This is, like, the first time I've seen it there.
Yeah, the deck is definitely making a comeback. You know, people were playing a lot of Grixis, a little bit of Jund, because there was a hypothesis out there that that type of deck had a good matchup against Green White. People have since come around and realized that that's not entirely true. But, like, that
I think it's true of Grixis. I don't think it's true of Jund.
I think that Green White is a small favorite against Grixis.
Interesting.
Post-sideboard, Grixis gets a little bit better, maybe even as a small favorite. But I think that as a matchup, Green White is a small favorite.
Interesting.
But again, like, those decks were both really good against humans, and with, like, those decks kind of falling out of favor, humans made a strong showing this week.
Coming in next, we have Naya Midrange coming in with 7 points. This is actually just Green White. A lot of them are just Green White splashing red.
It's
not really a splash. It's like Green White tokens cards with red cards also.
Right, and it's a similar concept to my Bant deck. Basically, they were trying to find an edge in the mirror, and they really found one. Nihiri starts asking questions, and, like, being able to play your red card without ever drawing a red land because of your Oath of Nisses is pretty powerful. And then your other red card costs 1,000 mana, and it's Dragon Lord Atarka.
Yeah, well, this is actually a deck that we've talked about on the podcast on episodes that weren't on, where I talked about how I was a pretty big fan of Naya Midrange. Most of mine played Gideon, only some of these played Gideon, but basically just, like, playing the same game plan where you're just playing, like, the best green cards. Actually, these decks are so different than I expected.
Yeah, this deck has evolved a little bit. Its most original renditions were just Green White, Splash Nihiri, and Dragon Lord Atarka.
I mean, it's still playing, like, nothing. It's, like, still in the mono Haymaker plan, but just looking at these deck lists, it is different than before.
Yeah, this one is more blurring lines towards, like, a control deck, where Green-White is very much, like, on the aggro side of midrange. Naya is a little bit closer to the control side of midrange.
What do you think?
I think it's a great deck. It's probably in my top two decks that I would, or top three, because there's a chance I would play Bant Humans. The decks that I would play for any given tournament, I would play either this deck, the Bant Humans deck, or just some other variation of Green White. I think that this deck is very good, and it's very good at beating Green White.
All right.
So if you're playing against a lot and you're trying to find an edge in the mirror, this is a good place to find it.
Yeah, I mean, it gives you Radiant Flames and, like, still some of the best green cards. And, like, that was my idea with Jund and why I wanted to play Jund for so long. And this deck does the same thing, but gets to play things like Archangel Avacyn, which is just insane.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes ulting Nihiri for a Linvala is insane.
Well, I'm a huge Linvala fan. Also, you could also just ult it for, like a Atarka, right? Like,
yeah, that's the most common one. That's why you'll see, like, two or three Atarkas and one Linvala. But, like, being able to move the Linvala into the main also gives you sideboard slots, which you can use for Radiant Flames.
Right.
So, like, it's a little bit different deck, but it's mostly the same concept.
Bant Company moving up the list again and coming in with 11 points at number 3. Honestly, this deck has been solid the whole time, and with things like, surprisingly, I mean, let's see, Bant Company moves up and we see no four color rights. We basically see no rights decks in the top 5. Like, obviously Bant Company's gonna move up in that scenario.
Yeah, and exactly. This is a really good deck. It's a pretty big underdog to the rights decks, similar to every deck on this list, I think, other than White Weenie, like, some draws. That one's probably pretty close to a coin flip, but, like, all of these green mid-rangey decks are, like, pretty big underdogs to the rights decks, so that could be really well positioned going forward. But yeah, Bant Company,
it's still bad against tokens though, right?
Bant Company,
yeah,
I think so. It's interesting. I've heard from Bant Company players that tokens is a good matchup and that humans is a bad matchup. And I've heard from other company players that humans is a good matchup and tokens is a bad matchup. So they're probably all pretty close, and it depends on
like the die roll and like where you're sitting in the matchup, and like the games don't feel as close, kind of like Burn vs. Jund or...
Yeah, and it's how you build your deck. Like, if you're building your deck with Eldrazi Sky Spawner, like, that's like not really that great against tokens, just because like their cards all outclass Eldrazi Sky Spawner, but it's two guys on the ground against humans.
Right.
And like they have a lot of X1s, so... You know, it's a deck building thing, and I think that you could build versions of Bant that are good against either, but not necessarily against both.
Well, the up and coming deck, the Bant Humans deck, coming in with 15 points, people are hot about this deck.
Yeah, this is a hot one coming straight out of the mind of Yuya Watanabe, and it certainly looks like it, because the deck looks like nonsense if you are just looking at it on paper, but the fact that it uses Collected Company as a combat trick in a really impressive way by being able to company for Thalia's lieutenants. It really impacts like your blocks. You don't know what blocks are good, because you can get blown out so hard. And then also it turns Ojutai's command into an insane combat trick if you've already killed one of their lieutenants. So this deck really like kind of gets you coming and going. So I'm really impressed with the way the deck works, and it's different from most Collected Company decks, and like you're just trying to get value off of it in a different way. I guess most Collected Company decks, you are either trying to dig for creatures or you're trying to like get more than 4 mana out of your card.
It's got the classic 4 Dromoko's Command, 4 Company, 2 Ojutai's Command.
Yeah, exactly.
It's everything Casey wants to do in the world.
Yeah, that's a sweet lineup of spells in your deck. You know, it's a lot of creatures for my taste, but like
think,
they're all.
Do you think cool Lamholt Pacifist made this deck possible? I mean, like this is just like an all star deck. Like let's just read it. So we're talking about Yuya Watanabe's deck. It's 4 Thraben Inspector, 2 Knight of the White Orchid, 3 Duskwatch Recruiter, 4 Lamholt Pacifist, 4 Thalia's Lieutenant, 4 Reflector Mage, 4 Tireless Tracker, 25 lands. Those spells.
Yeah, it's a cool deck, and like just being able to go up to a more reasonable number of lands but not really be punished for it in your human deck is nice, because you do have you can very easily play a game off of 3 lands with this deck, but you're not incredibly punished for hitting your 5th land drop like you are with the white weenie human decks.
I think this deck Thalia's Lieutenant's a funny one for me. It's just it's got a little something else.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a world beater, does it? But like,
I mean, every creature in this deck is a human,
right? Exactly. So like, it turns like mediocre board states into unbeatable ones, which is just a powerful thing for a card to do.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I wonder. I would be curious to see like how this deck actually matches up to traditional mono white humans. Because traditionally, like, always watching is really how you win in that mirror.
Right.
And not having access to that, like, I wonder if Collected Company is actually better.
Well, you have 4 Dromoko's Command, right? So you can just make them sack it.
That is true. That's, yeah. Sure, I can accept that.
That's just my thought. Like, on paper, that's my thought, is how you beat that deck.
Sure. No, I mean, that's reasonable. I would be curious to see, like, kind of how that one plays out.
And you have Lamholt Pacifist, so.
Yeah, and that card's unbeatable, so.
Coming in with 28 points, we have Green White Tokens.
Yeah, this is an insane deck. It came from kind of humble beginnings. Like, it wasn't a deck anybody was playing before the Pro Tour, but after the Pro Tour, it's been
the best deck since.
Yeah, the best. Yeah, and like by a considerable margin.
Yeah.
You know, there are decks that can beat it. Really unfair decks like Rites.
What and makes Ramp this deck? Beat it. What puts this deck together? Like, if you had to say, all right, we're gonna ban a card to make this not the best deck, what card would you ban?
Probably Avacyn, because that's the one that, like, this deck takes advantage of better than any other deck. But the thing is that, like, every card is just pretty good.
Well, every card, I mean, before Lamholt Pacifist, every card was a rare.
Right. It was just, yeah, like...
It's mono good cards in a different way than we've typically seen. Typically, green-white doesn't get mono good cards. It's like, you have to play, like, a 3-color deck to get that kind of edge.
Right, and this deck does it on two. You know, it has somehow terrible mana, which is probably, like, accounts for more than half of all the game losses that this deck actually picks up in a tournament. So that is something to be aware of. Trying to play Nissa and Gideon in your deck with, you know, any amount of two drops is just tough. But the deck is actually really powerful. And I compared it to Modern Jund, which is kind of interesting because it doesn't really quite play the same way. But every card in your deck is worth about 1.25 cards out of your opponent's deck, which if you're exchanging resources throughout the game, you end up way ahead.
Yeah, you're up by 2 or 3 cards by the end of that game.
Exactly.
So what would you play and why, Casey?
Well, I would probably, I'm for sure playing a deck that has Fortified Villages and Canopy Vistas in it. Whether it's green white, Bant Humans, or Naya, or, you know, like some other variation of green white, it's going to be that, just because I think that that's where I want to be in standard right now, unless one of you has a great thing in the ice deck you want to ship me.
I don't have a great thing in the ice deck.
Then probably one of those things I just said.
Yeah, I'm pretty set on Grixis or Naya midrange, or Jund. One of those three decks is probably the only place that I'd be. I played more Jund this week, trying to figure out, like, is there a way that I can make the matchup against green and white good? Probably set on Grixis. And the reason is actually just set on a Reduke article. And that's, if you're not having fun, you're going to lose. Honestly, he said that he would rather play... He said a good deck rather than a great deck, if the good deck is one he enjoys.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been true for me in a lot of situations. And I've won a lot of matches of Magic just, you know, playing probably a subpar deck. Like, I've played a ton of, you know, Jeskai decks when green-black decks were the best decks. And that's just never been right in any format. Typically, that's a really tough matchup. But I just don't really like playing those decks for the most part. So I'm going to play a deck that I like and just try to be a master of it. Try to be as prepared for that matchup as I can be.
Yeah.
And I've won a lot of matches.
Yeah, so I've jammed a lot of Grixis. This is the first week, by the way, that nobody can hear me talking about Green-Red Ramp, which apparently is tearing up the top 32 of Minneapolis, or...
Oh, yeah, it was around in the top 32. It was actually just outside the top 8, or the top 5.
Was that in Manchester, too?
Yeah.
Apparently it's doing well at both tournaments. Yeah. I'm not sure what they're doing differently.
It just didn't quite break through for some reason.
Well, I don't know. What I'm saying is I don't know what the deck list is, but this is the first week that it's not on my radar of decks that I would play.
Well, let's take a quick look.
It's the same deck.
Yeah, it's the same basic thing.
They are on a lot more tier list trackers. This is a Ruin in the Wake deck that we're looking at right now. I don't know. I think that I'm not sure what's, like, causing me to be like, I'm not really into it. This deck that we're looking at, by the way, the 17th place deck from Manchester, is really close to what people were talking about early in the format. It just has Tireless Tracker instead. So it's a deck that plays 4 Ruin in the Wake and 4 Traverse the Uvenwald and 1 Waste. And then, so it's trying to get that interaction going. There's a lot of things in the history of Magic that are really great, and I'm not about playing, like, bad versions of cards that I've loved. Like, imagine if they printed Lotus Cobra as, like, an 0-1 for 2 mana. Do you think I'd play it?
I mean, probably. You would put up some protest, but you would play like a 4 mana 0-1 Lotus Cobra.
That's not true.
Yes, it is.
No, the reason Lotus Cobra is as sweet as it is because it's a 2-1 for 2 that you can get the beats in against the control decks.
I think that you would be like a kid on Christmas with any amount of Lotus Cobra.
No, like, the reason that I love Rattleclaw Mystic so much was, like, because it was it was almost Lotus Cobra. There were games where you felt like you were playing Lotus Cobra.
Yeah. Rattleclaw Mystic is, like, one of the only cards in the history of Magic that I think you and I both actually love.
Yeah, that card's great. you just also didn't play standard in Lotus Cobra standard. Like, you would get to play a lot of sweet decks. Lotus Cobra decks are sweet, which you like. But, like, you attribute Lotus Cobra to Primeval Titan, which you hate. But, like, I played a lot of non-Primeval Titan Lotus Cobra decks.
See, that does sound like a good time. But yeah, Primeval Titan is just a miserable card to play with and against. So.
But what I'm saying is, when I look at Ruin in the Wake, I see bad Rampant Growth. I'm not about that life.
Oh yeah, that's very much what it is. And Traverse the Ulvenwald is just like a crazy bad card.
That's my opinion too. Like, I'm not into this deck. I'm not into like where what this deck is about. Not that being said, if I was playing against this top five, like if I was like, all right, you're gonna play against one green white tokens deck, but the rest of the day you're gonna play against this stuff, man, I'm on Green White Ramp all day. So maybe I'm wrong, but right now it's Grixis for me.
Cool. I used to really like, you know, Grixis decks at large. And then the, like, Summer of Modern Grixis kind of soured me on it, because I never thought that deck was good, and people were always raving about it. But I do think that the standard Grixis deck is cool and powerful, so I think that it's not a bad place to be. If you can build your deck to beat humans, and then, like, you're not a huge underdog against green-white, and you just have to outplay them, which isn't a bad place to be.
Yeah, I found the green-white matchup to be pretty close to 50-50, if not slightly in my favor, and that could be play skill. I don't know. I don't know how good the green-white players I'm playing are.
Yeah, my opinion of the matchup is, like, green-white is about a 60% favorite in game one, and then Grixis is probably, like, a 55% favorite in games two and three.
Interesting. Okay. But, yeah, that's where I'm at. That's where we're at. And, all right. So, every week on the podcast, we talk about something that's going to make you better at Magic, whether that's, you know, going in depth on some on a small topic or going over a broad topic. We call them the training grounds. You pay two mana, you get a discount on leveling up, basically.
Yeah, and like you also get a discount on activating your Eldrazi Displacer.
That's true. Also, I heard that's a deck in Modern.
I mean, it was that was the card that like busted open the blue white Eldrazi Mirror. It lets you like go infinite with Drowner of Hopes.
With Drowner of Hopes. All right. Is that true? You can't go infinite, right? Because it still costs one white.
No. Eldrazi Displacer costs a colorless and two generic to activate. And then Drowner of Hope.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, so you actually just get like infinite tokens.
Okay. That's good talk.
Yeah. So, yeah, Training Grounds it's a far more relevant Magic card than it was when we named this segment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when we named the segment, the idea was like we don't want to call it the level up segment. That sounded degrading to LR, by the way, because they call it that, and that's not what I mean at all.
I'm just kidding. Like, no, all due respect to Limited Resources. It's a great podcast.
Absolutely, like, the best Magic podcast out there.
Can't make you level up, but it can give you the tools to level
exactly.
up.
Exactly.
Like a Training Grounds.
Like a Training Grounds, exactly. Thank you. So, super shout out to Marshall. He's, like, really good friend of mine. I feel like I came across rude there. Not intended.
Shade Throne.
No, there's no Shade Throne. Actually, we had listeners. We'll talk about it at the end of the podcast. But this week, we want to talk about not getting hooked. And to start, so oftentimes on the Training Grounds, I'll bring up a word or a phrase, and I'll say, what's the definition of this? This week, I want to talk about the big picture. So the big picture is a broad overall view or perspective of an issue or a problem. That's pretty basic, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's the most basic way to look at things.
So there's a lot of ways to look at this. So every week on the show, we talk about little things that you can do to improve. Little tiny things. And at the end of the day, it can feel overwhelming. Because if you're focusing on tapping your lands right, attacking right, blocking right, doing everything, like sometimes you're going to get caught up in things that really didn't matter in a specific matchup. And practice is kind of what makes perfect, and we'll kind of get into that. But, Casey, what's a big picture in Magic for you?
Well, it can be anything. Sometimes it's, you know, the big picture is we're trying to get on the Pro Tour, or we're trying to win a specific matchup. Like that, where, like, we've got an end goal, but not really, like, the nitty-gritty of it isn't what's important.
Right. So, historic matchup of Wendell versus what's the other person's name?
I don't know. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about the Sanagos plays. What is the name on episode 3 that we decided to give so and so?
Oh, Lars?
So Lars versus Wendell.
Sure.
They're playing those Green White Devotion versus, I don't remember what Lars was playing. But there were Thunder Mahalkites, Xenagoses.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
all
yeah,
kinds
yeah.
of stuff involved. And, like, Wendell, or, you know, however you want to say that word.
It's Wendell. There's one right way to say it, and it's Wendell.
But they're playing a match of Magic, and there's just nobody's doing anything. For a long time, they're just both trying to get advantages out of their Planeswalkers and be ahead on board before they make up basically an alpha attack when trading a Thundermail Hulkite for three creatures and a Planeswalker, or a Planeswalker, I should say, is probably a good trade. And, like, how do you get to the point where things like that happen, where you don't realize, because we talked about the basics of Magic is managing resources. It's a game of resource management. And when you lose picture, that big picture of, that's what Magic is to me. When I think about Magic, I think of resource management and winning that game of Magic through resource management. And so when I think of, like, the biggest losses of big pictures ever, this game that we watched pops into my mind.
Yeah, that was like an insane sequence. And there was one of the players had a much, much better draw than the other. And they were very, very cautious.
And it was Wendell that had that draw. And he said that he wanted to play defense.
Right. Yeah, he said that he never likes to attack in the mirror until he's established his defensive game plan. And, like, that's, like, those matchups were pretty grindy, so I can understand, like, having that as a general guideline. But in practice, it lost him that game. Because, like, he just never attacked. If he just, like, started attacking with his dragons, he would have won that game very easily. But because he was afraid of who knows what, he ended up losing.
Yeah, he also was afraid to monstrous his Thundermail Hulkite or whatever. What is it called?
Stormbreath Dragon.
Stormbreath Dragon. I'm saying Thundermail Hulkite, and I'm like, I know this isn't the right Magic card.
Yeah, man. Thundermail Hulkite. What a Magic card that is.
They're both great. Let's be clear. Yeah. Stormbreath Dragon and Thundermail Hulkite, they're the same Magic card.
Kind of. So, like, they're both good. They're just good at, like, different things, I feel like.
They're both great against Lingering Souls. Anyway, what is this is important. when you think about losing track of things, like, that's one thing that you're losing track of. If, like, you sit down in a match and you're like, all right, I'm going to set up a defensive game and I'm going to get ahead. And it's like, well, what if you could have killed him?
Yeah, like establishing a good defensive presence is powerful, especially in, like, the big dumb green creature mirror. But, like, if your opponent is dead on board, you know, just go ahead and attack him.
Right, but that's what we're talking about when we're talking about getting hooked, right? There's so many things that you can do to lose track of, like, the thing that's going to win you the game, because the big picture can be something different in different matchups. We constantly talk about doing the little things when the big picture is so important. Sometimes the big picture can change an entire match of Magic. That's why knowing your role is so important, right?
Yeah, and, like, sometimes it can be an adjustment on the fly. Like, okay, normally I'd play this matchup like this, but my opponent is mana screwed, so now I'm the beatdown. Let's end this game, and, like, they're just dead before they ever draw out of it.
Right, and so my opponent has missed some land drops. I have a Thundermelt or a Stormbreath Dragon in play and a Xenagos. I can easily just activate this and deal them 7 damage and attack. And it's like, well, I could do that, or I could protect my Xenagos. And it's kind of like, what's really going to win you the game?
Right, exactly. And, like, if you activate that dragon, even if they kill your Xenagos, they're probably dead on the next turn.
Right.
So, like, okay, they draw something to kill your Xenagos, and then they're dead.
Right. And this can happen in all sorts of ways. When you think about things something really simple, like playing an aggro deck and attacking into a 4-4 with your 5/1s.
Yeah, like, so your opponent now controls the Abyss. But the Abyss isn't the best Magic card ever printed. It's just a pretty good one.
Right. And you can either not get in that 4 damage and then get in 3 damage next turn and 2 damage the next turn.
Right. That represents 10 damage, or sorry, 9 damage over the course of that sequence. And if you start this when your opponent's at 6, you're going to win.
Right. And so many, and if you draw an Atarkus command, the game's
immediately over.
And so things with Atarka Red, people didn't realize it was really a suicide deck where you just, like, jam your tokens into things, and that's how the great players qualified for Pro Tours, won Pro Tours. Like, that's how that deck won. And so many people I'd watch playing the deck, I'd be like, oh, I'm not attacking. They got a 4-4. And it's like, and I'd be the one playing the 4-4. I'm like, well, thank goodness you didn't attack.
Right. In the words of the great Patrick Sullivan, you can't be half a gangster when you're playing a deck like this. Like, if you're going to play a Tarka Red or a deck like that, you have to be willing to make your attacks. And, like, be like, sometimes goblins die.
And that's what we're talking about in Getting Hooked. You got too focused on that 4-4 and not focused enough on their life total, which is really your end game, right?
Yeah. Everything in between 20 and 0 basically doesn't matter, like, when you're playing a deck like that. So, like, okay.
And that's the basics, right? We're talking about, like, the simplest form of getting hooked. Right. Whereas Michael Hinderocker, 2 weeks ago on the podcast, talked about, you know, he doesn't like getting in counterspell wars. And it was really funny. On the beginning of the show, you get lost in things. And when you think, you know, we'd made a joke at the beginning of the podcast 2 weeks ago. I talked about immediately regretting a decision. I said something about Manny sacrificing goats, and, like, it just went off. Like, for 3 minutes, we talked about nothing but goat sacrifice. And I was like, well, I immediately regretted making that joke. And that's the same thing that happens when you get hooked in Magic. When you are sitting there, like, and, you know, there was a play. We were watching a face-to-face games something today, because that was the Magic coverage that was on. And this player cast a Court of Calling for 2. And his opponent sat there in the tank.
Yeah, and he had a Cryptic Command, and ultimately he says, I have bigger fish to fry. I'm not gonna counter this Court of Calling.
Right, and then his opponent put in
Gaddock Teague.
And now he can't win the game because he's playing Scapeshift.
Right. He put in the 2-mana version of Platinum Angel and just beat him to death with it. Well, he died with
a Cryptic Command. He was dead on board to it too.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter what the 2-drop he got was, he was gonna die to it. He couldn't beat
any 2-drop.
Right. And so it's like he got so caught up in like, at least it's not whatever he was worried about, right? At least he's spending this. I think he literally thought at least it's not Fulminator Mage. And like was like, I can beat whatever the 2-drop is because I'll just bounce it.
Was his opponent playing Abzan Company?
His opponent was playing Abzan Company.
Yeah. So I think that he was like afraid of getting comboed out. So he's like, okay.
He wasn't even close to getting comboed out. All he had was an Eternal Witness and something else in play.
Right. But like a Court of Calling for a Malira, Untap, Viscera Seer, Kitchen Finks. You know what I mean? Like, things can happen to you. So
one of the thoughts that he also had was, I still have this Cryptic Command. I can just tap his team so I don't die on board next turn. And in the end of the day, like, he got lost. He got hooked. It was like, he didn't think of, like, worst or best case scenario for himself. He only thought of, like, well, at the end of the day, like, I can do this. And for me and you, we were both like, oh, you got to counter this, like, you're dead to whatever this is.
Yeah, it actually doesn't matter what it is. You can't beat it.
Yeah. Otherwise, he would have waited till he could do it for 3 to get a Fulminator Mage, right? It's not like it were taking a second.
Right, exactly. He needed to untap to be able to get it for 3.
So it's this thing where it's hard to bring it back. How do you bring it back? How do you realize you're on the hook?
It's tough. It's really, really tough to do it in the moment. Because you think that you've got something figured out, and that's how you get on the hook. And by the time you realize you're on the hook, you're being dragged up into the boat, right? That's how it works. That's how the game is played.
And that's just how a hook works,
right? That's why they make them so sharp. So when it's, you sometimes you have to take a step back and say, hey, is this not normal? Like, would I normally not attack against an opponent with 3 lands in play and no creatures? No, then why do I think that just because I'm playing this specific matchup that I would hold back? Or, you know, if my opponent cast a Gaddock Teague, would I ever even consider not countering it? No. So I know that this deck has access to Gaddock Teague, and I know that I can't beat it. So, you know, maybe I should hold off on that.
And it's no penalty for you to take 30 seconds longer on that play, right?
Right. Exactly. And, like, if somebody's Court of Calling for 2, it's usually bad news. They're getting some kind of hate bear, or they're getting a combo piece. Either way, worth countering.
Yeah, or when you break down, like, the simple, and I don't want to get too much caught up in that play, because, like, counter wars, not attacking with your red creatures, like, every deck, every situation, sometimes you just get in the situation where, like, you're worried about something. I know for a lot of people, like, they'll play LD decks, and they'll be like, you know what, I'm just going to LD every turn instead of like just playing that Inferno Titan or playing, you know, whatever it is that they can play.
Right. And then your opponent has enough lands and then it's like nothing happened. You spent five turns doing nothing.
Right. And so in every situation in Magic, you just have to decide like what's important this turn of the game? What's the best play this turn of the game? We talk all the time like know your matchups and know your role. And that's important. Actually, knowing your role is what's going to bring you back from that hook. Like, yeah. I can get in this counter... Like, for example, I play Temur all the time, right? Do I want to get in a counterspell war, or do I want to stop one counterspell?
Right, and it can totally depend on the matchup in the right. situation. Sometimes you need to save up your Stubborn Isles or whatever for a counterspell war. Sometimes...
I want to play an aggressive card and then just Stubborn Isle the first counterspell that they play.
Right.
And then be ahead on tempo. It's so dependent upon what is placed in front of you that, like... Having a game plan of I'm going to play defensively in this matchup is just, you got to know what's going on, man.
You're painting with too broad of strokes, right? Like, my usual instinct, if I'm playing Legacy and I'm playing Delver, I have a daze, my opponent casts a spell that can be dazed. Most of the time I'm going to cast the daze because those things have an expiration date. They don't stay good forever. But, like, if I daze my opponent's 2-drop, but I know that their 3-drop is the only thing that matters in their deck, I actually don't. Like, it's okay to hold on to the daze there. And so you just need to think, like, don't get caught up in, oh, I'm going to get daze while the dazing is good. Because that's not always true.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, I have a similar approach with Remand and Scapeshift. I'm like, when in doubt, Remand it. And if you can make them spend more mana, Remand it.
And yeah, definitely.
The reason for that is because you're basically playing an Explore at that point. And what do you want to do in Scapeshift? So a lot of players will watch them play Scapeshift and go, why did you remand that? Like, it didn't do anything. I'm like, it did everything. That's why I won the game. And the reason that I can think of that, and the when in doubt is a clause there, by the way, just don't remand everything they play.
Right. I'm very sure I shouldn't remand this, but Spencer said remand.
That's not what I said. You get advantages from knowing matchups and knowing the situations that you're in. So at the end of the day, like, how many mana do they have available? Could you really get into a counterspell war? And if you do, how many cards are you really going to be down? And if you are down all the cards, are you going to win? What's the real clock that they're on? They have a 4/4 in play. You have 5/1/1s. Like,
yeah, like, as long as they're not at 20, like, you know, you're probably a pretty big favorite.
Right.
And if you've got your counterspells up and, like, you're ready to go, you know, they can't attack. They're going to lose a race. And
decide,
they can't block you forever.
Exactly. So to wrap this up, like, decide what resources are important and make your game plan accordingly. Don't fight over resources that don't matter, because that's how you're going to lose weird games of Magic where you question yourself for a long time afterwards.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I played a match of Magic not that long ago where my opponent thought-seized me, looked at my hand, and then they cast a Surgical Extraction on a land in my graveyard because I had another of that same land in my hand. Which is, like, it's fine, kind of. It's, like, it's not part of a strategy for winning that matchup. It just isn't. And my opponent boarded them in, and, like, if it had been a real spell, they could have won that game. But because they chose to board in Surgical Extraction and also cast it to get a land out of my hand when I already had plenty of lands, they were just getting hooked on the idea of this being a powerful interaction.
So at the end of the day, I guess it's really just think.
What is a strategy that's going to win me the game?
Yeah. One thing to think about is I have oftentimes had players say, Spencer, when you're winning, why do you slow down so much? And it's like, because if I don't slow down, I'm going to lose.
Sure. I mean, if you're... Sometimes when you're winning, you need to think about... You know, okay.
Joshua Layton actually taught me that.
Yeah. What could happen? What could make me lose?
Yeah. We had Joshua Layton come to Oasis Games when he was dating one of the employees there. And I said, what makes you good at Magic? He goes, well, that's a broad topic. I'm like, no, like, seriously, like, what do you do differently? And he said to me, I play slower when I'm winning.
Let's expand on that a little bit. So the reason for you do that is because when you're losing, you probably can't play around anything. If you're already losing, you need to take risks. You can't play around
right.
having the counterspell. If you're winning, you don't have to take so many risks. So, like, if you're winning, you don't need to tap out for something that doesn't really impact the board, because if you get remanded, like, then you're way behind. If you, like, if you're losing to their Snapcaster Mage, whatever, and, like, you need to put boots on the ground or you need to kill it so that you don't just die to it, and then you end up losing to their, you know, Scape Shift or whatever because you didn't hold up your combo. These examples were so much easier when Splinter Twin was in Modern, by the way. but, like, anything like that, like, some of you just need to take a risk. Okay, I'm at 4 life, and he's got a Snapcaster Mage, and this is probably, like, my best chance to kill it because I need to cast a different spell next turn. Like, sometimes that's just a risk you have to take. And if they have it, you died. But guess what? You were going to die anyway.
Yeah. So, just slow it down. If you have time to slow it down, slow it down. And I think that at the end of the day, you'll find that you have less plays where you, like, go home scratching your head when this isn't happening to you. Because those are the worst.
Yeah, you're like, I don't know how I found a way to lose that game.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's see here. Let's move on. So don't forget that you can join the clan on MTGO by messaging me at Spencer13Dev or Quentin at Earthstripe. That's URTHSTRYPE.
That sounded right.
Yeah, it was right. I did it slowly. Don't forget that you can check out Oasis Games at mtgoasis.com and oasisccg.com. They really are the best place to buy Magic cards, guys. We're not joking.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. Like, I wouldn't hawk them if I didn't think that it was the best place to buy cards. I haven't bought cards from anywhere else in a long, long, long time.
Yeah, they're the best. You can support the podcast directly by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. It is going to be May 30th tomorrow. And we are really close to our goal for the year. Like, we're like $4 off.
I'll take it. You know, that's a win in my book. Pretty gosh darn close.
Yeah. So, we have a lot of plans for what to do with the money from patreon.com. Check it out. Support. Every dollar counts. If you have the funds, it's just a monthly fee, and we would really appreciate it because it makes it so we can do more great things for you guys. We already have a YouTube channel launched where every week you can see every week you will see a testing video. And if I forget to post one, I definitely will post another video. But I have plans for all kinds of other videos. There are things in the work Manny may not be on the podcast, but Brewing After Brews, he'll be on that. I'll tell you that much.
Exactly. And he wouldn't even necessarily have to agree to it when he's like, no, because we'll just get him drunk and then make him agree to it. It's the perfect crime.
It's coercion, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys, check it out. Patreon.com/CCMTG. We're going to be fun the show. Or we're going to be fun. Well, let's do the show first. So you can find the show at puremtgo.com, mtgotraders.com. You cannot find it at Oasis Games right now because it's down, but you can find it at mtgcast.com. SoundCloud, when I remember, most of your podcasting apps. If you have a podcasting app that it's not on, please let me know so I can try and get it there. ConstructedCriticism.com. You can find me at Spencer13H on Twitter. You can find the show at CCMTG on Twitter. And you can also join the Constructed Criticism Facebook group on Facebook. Just search Constructed Criticism Facebook group. It should come up. If it doesn't, message me. And if you add me as a friend, I can add you really fast.
Yeah, those things are all true.
Also, like us on Facebook and subscribe to us on YouTube.
There you go.
Casey, go ahead.
Yeah, you can find me on Facebook, Casey Tuna Bloodworth, or on Twitter at CC Bloodthirst. And those are basically the main places. Messaging me on Magic Online, I'll probably never see it because it's in 5,000 windows already.
All right. we have people wanting to start a Constructive Criticism League on Cockatrice, so that might happen. And
we're also going to be starting a Constructive Criticism League on Yahoo Fantasy Sports come September.
Yeah, come September. We have... I won't August. Do more than 10 people.
Yeah, it's just not super fun with more people.
I like 8 people, but I'll do 10.
Right.
We're talking about football already, so...
Yeah. If we get 20, you know, we could do 2 leagues.
It's obviously, like, almost June if we're talking about football boringly, right?
Yeah. Just, like, optimistically, like, someday.
Someday we'll get to play fantasy football. So if you're interested, you just have to play every week. It's not fun if you're not playing every week. If you're like, oh yeah, that sounds really fun, I'm going to do it, but like, you can't spend the 5 minutes literally every day. It's not like some days. It's probably better if you're on there every day checking your lineup, and then making sure you have a legal lineup on Sunday. But if Casey's dying, but if you're interested, let us know.
Yeah.
Because fantasy football is really fun.
It is really fun, but only if everybody plays. So, like,
because bye weeks aren't fun.
Right. Don't be, yeah, I'm going to do it, and then never set a lineup guy.
But then you can be Manny Moraes and take second place.
Yeah. Yeah, he made me sweat. I've won a lot of fantasy football leagues in my life. Like, probably, a super unlikely number of them. And Manny gave me like one of the closest runs for my money.
You're welcome. I drafted his team and he set the lineup that he literally had the same lineup that I set for him week one.
Yeah. He almost never set his lineup and like just steamrolled people because like he had like Spencer's sleepers that he put on Manny's team, like really came through big. I don't remember exactly who they were.
I don't remember they were either, but I was, like, I was mad because if I had drafted in Manny's spot, I would have won that league. Like hands down.
Nah, you're too meddlesome. I would have crushed you.
I'm not a tinkerer.
I am. I'm super bad about it. But I also like.
But if you don't know what we're talking about and you want to like learn fantasy football, we can start multiple leagues too. Like,
yeah,
but
totally.
It's a really fun thing to do to get you like. Magic's not the only thing, guys. So let us know if you're interested, and we can be either set up multiple leagues. But we definitely want enough people to do a fun every week one, and then I'd be happy to join other ones too. Hashtag would that be good? So hashtag would that be good is our Twitter outreach program. Every week on the show, we're going to read hashtag would that be good and talk about everything that comes that way, including some kind of donuts.
Is it the ice cream donut? Because that one was super old, man.
No, it wasn't ice cream donuts. What was it?
I don't know. I almost never check it except for when we're doing the show now.
Well, let's take a look at it right now. So hashtag with a... Oh, I'm literally just tweeting right now. That would be... We're just going to have a blank hashtag. Would that be good if I do that? It was funny. There's weeks where we have this be like... There's 30 of them, and then there's weeks that we...
There's none.
Yeah. There's none.
It's feast or famine. So let's see.
So we have me talking about streaming. That will be coming back. I think that I'll find a day to do it with Austin. So for those who don't know, Think Twice is coming back. I do have a co-host. His name is Austin Geltz. You might have heard of him as he was on an episode where we introduced our new co-host and he thought he'd be on the show for some reason. but yeah, he is my co-host for Think Twice. We just have to get a time set down where we can actually do the stream every week. People want us to stream and we will do that. And Oasis Games has agreed to sponsor it. So,
sweet.
But starting with T3H Matt, he says, can't wait to draft the Hoden deck in MTG EMA. Hashtag that'd be good. I don't know.
I don't know what Hunting does.
At least it's not Hodor.
Hodor.
Scotty Prosky says, 99% sure that I'll be playing Trey Roots and Life from the Loam. Twiddle Storm, here I come. Hashtag that'd be good. This dude literally has a new deck idea every week.
Yeah, for sure. What does Trade Roots do?
I don't know. For some reason, I'm thinking of the other one, though, from World Wake that's something to the winds.
Oh.
That might be the same card, though. Trade Roots?
Yeah. For those of you keeping score at home, by the way, apparently Hondens are part of a cycle of legendary enchantments from Kamigawa Block.
Trade Roots. MTG. What do they do?
All kinds of stuff. But Trade Roots is an enchantment also that costs a one and a blue. And you can pay one mana to return target land you control to its owner's hand. And you can also pay one mana to discard a land card to draw a card.
So Life from the Loam plus this does seem pretty good.
Yeah, combo deck.
But why Twiddle?
No clue.
Scotty, we need more confirmation on this. Why are we twiddling things?
Yeah, what are we twiddling?
Yeah. And then we have... I tweeted, if your deck gives you the draw to win, it's your job to do it no matter how lucky your opponent is getting. Hashtag MDG, hashtag always improving, hashtag would that be good.
Oh, so the Hondin enchantments, by the way, they all do something based on the number of shrines you control, and they aren't themselves shrines.
Okay.
I don't know if there's also more shrines than just these five. I'm not, like, a shrine expert or a Kamigawa block expert.
So what do you think about what I tweeted?
What was it? Sorry, I was reading about shrines.
I said, if your deck gives you the draw to win, it's your job to win, no matter how lucky your opponent is getting.
Yeah, completely. Like, that is one of the most important lessons you can learn in Magic. And I mean, it came up when the last tournament that I was playing in, where, like, a good friend of ours, Shaddy, came up to console me because of, like, how insanely lucky that my opponent had gotten in game three of our match. And I was like, well, had I not punted game two, we wouldn't have had a game three. So
it was me. Oh, no, he apologized to you after I told him.
It was about a different match.
Oh, okay. So you got the run bads in that matchup.
Yeah. And, like, that was just, you know, something that happens.
Well, we were playing in an online PPTQ yesterday when I tweeted this, and I just put my enchantment on the wrong guy and was like, oh, well, that was really bad. And then two turns later, I lost the game, and he wouldn't have had another turn had I done it right. And that's a huge deal. Like, you can, like, he was on zero cards in hand. He had to runner to win that game. And instead of being like, man, like, he's so lucky he won that, I was like, no, dude, like,
I can't believe I let him get that lucky.
Exactly. And it's a huge difference to be like, oh, I know I messed up, but, like, he got super lucky. No, you messed up.
Yeah.
You need end to correct.
End of sentence. Period. Yeah. That's it. That's all.
So learn from my mistakes. Don't get mad that your opponents got lucky. Realize that, like, you had a position to not let them get lucky. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
See you later.
Yeah. Also, in case anyone's wondering, Michael Hinderocker 4-2'd the RPTQ and did not make top 8.
What a chump. What do we even talk to that guy for?
And Quentin, I think he might have 1-2 dropped and hung out with his girlfriend who was there with him.
Taking in beautiful Littleton, Colorado.
Yeah. So thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you guys all next week.
Magic.